Welcome everybody to the Quill and Query podcast. This is episode 10. My name is Brandon Hall, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today for the third time?
I'm doing well. I will change my answer from the previous answers earlier and say I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Brandon? How are you?
We'll go with fantastic as well. Thank you. No further comment.
That's it.
But yeah, we have a fun show. I'm excited to be back, and we have some cool topics to talk about today. Some exciting podcast news that I already mentioned in like our pre-show conversation, but just some analytics that I like to share with everybody once in a while. We're going to talk about things like protagonists, because we touched on antagonists a few weeks ago, a little bit on book marketing from both the author and consumer perspective, and then writing in different genres, which is something I've been thinking about a lot recently. But before we get into all that, we have our usual reading check-in. Ash, what are you currently reading?
Well, I have finished two books in the last 2 weeks, so I'm very proud of myself, and I am on my third, so I think I'm on like a reading sprint now. So I'm currently reading Lady Macbeth. It's an ARC that I got, an advanced reader's copy from Ava Reed, and it is fantastic so far. It's the story of Macbeth's mother, if I'm not wrong. Very good, very dark, very gruesome, and I am loving every minute of it. What are you reading, Brandon?
I am still reading the last book in the First Law trilogy, Last Argument of Kings by Joe Abercrombie. It's been slow going. Like I said, I usually the first half of the book is slow for me, and then I burn through the rest. Also, congrats, right? Nicole, on being on time, like you said.
Yes.
Oh, it looks like we have the rule.
And, well, you added another one, too.
Oh, did I?
Right?
Hang on. Oh, yeah, I'm rereading some Fire and Blood just because House of the Dragon Season 2 is out, and I need to catch up on my Targaryen history.
The lore.
Yes. On that, do you watch House of the Dragon, Ash? Is that a show that you... Mm-hmm. Did you see the premiere?
We did. We stayed up for it. We were going to like rewatch all of the first season, but we just did like a 20-minute recap on YouTube and watched the premiere. So
nice. Yeah, I'm glad they put those recaps out. I saw Max put one, like an official one out, which is nice. Everyone says the books are better than the show. I would agree, especially for A Song of Ice and Fire, but I feel like that's true for most people who read the books, just say that about every adaptation.
Definitely.
But yeah, I enjoyed the premiere. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, me too. It was really great.
And I can't wait to see the rest of season two. All right. What do we have next? We have some podcast updates. We're still working on the social media accounts for the podcast. Ash and I are both super busy, so it's going to take a little bit. Sorry,
yes. But
we will get to that when we get to it. And some exciting news. I did write a little bit of a lie here in the document. I said we reached 100 downloads. We did not. We are at 96. But I wrote that in.
Close.
I wrote it in anticipation that we were going to be at 100 by the time we did the show.
I like that.
Rest assured,
100. That's a big deal.
I think we'll hit 100 definitely by the next show. Just judging by the way the numbers tend to go up every time I upload a new episode, and we have 8 recurring listeners estimate. I don't get like hard numbers, but I get an estimate from RSS. So 8 recurring listeners, up from 5 last time, including and that doesn't include the people who watch us live. So it's nice to know that people are listening and we're not just talking into the void.
I agree. No, that's excellent. It's slow but steady progress, and we'll take it.
Yes, I love it. All right, so moving into our indie publishing and book topics. There were no indie releases this week. Sorry, I didn't want to skip over that and make everyone think we forgot.
No, that's okay.
I didn't have any releases to spotlight this week, but if we missed you and you did release a indie book either in this last week or the week we were gone, please let me know and I'll be happy to spotlight it, even though it'll be like a retroactive one. We would be happy to highlight you still. But yeah, into our publishing and book topics for the day. Let's start with, I should have ordered these better, but let's start with genres, Ash.
Sure.
So, sorry, a busy day at work today, so
I gotta
use my notes.
We're not even going to talk about work today. How about that?
That's a great idea. Yeah, so I obviously both of us are pretty big into fantasy, I would say. I think we've touched on a little bit of like other genres before, but I think most of the time we're talking about fantasy when it comes to what we're reading and stuff like that. But I was curious to hear your thoughts on writers, like both from a reader's perspective and a perspective as someone who's going to publish a book one day. What are your thoughts on writers exploring different genres, maybe than their fan base is used to? Are you the type of person who wants to stick to one genre in your own writing, or do you just want to write whatever feels right? I know everyone, some people are very strict about that. They're like, no, I'll only do fantasy, or maybe they'll do like, I'll write in this other genre, but I'm going to use a different pen name for like marketing reasons. So I just want to get your thoughts on that and maybe gauge where you think you're going to go with your writing career in that regard.
So it's interesting. I think it is pretty common for publishers to, like, once you get a publisher, if you want to go down that route, to kind of sell that you're going to switch up a genre for your next book, only because, they know once you're popular enough, you'll buy the book, your fans will buy the book. Also, apologies in advance for any mumbling or whatever. I'm brain dead.
Same.
So I think that's an easier thing to do for, like, traditionally published authors. I think the hard sell for self-publishing, like, where it gets muddy, is that, like, if you create a fan base naturally for one genre or one series of books, and let's say, like, it's a pretty decent, solid fan base you've made, I feel like it's a little bit more challenging to switch genres only because you're having to, like, keep everybody happy by yourself, if that makes sense. Not to say that it cannot be done. I actually enjoy when authors do that because it's like, oh, I'm seeing them stretch their creativity in not just the classic, like, I'm going to stay in this genre. I think a few authors that I follow do that. I have some stories that if, like, I ever get published, I'd be like, oh yeah, I want to, like, write this story. And it some of it's, like, more like realistic fantasy, like modern fantasy. Another is like sci-fi. So I don't know. I feel like if you pigeonhole yourself into one just because you're worried that people won't be okay with it, that's completely understandable because sometimes that's the case. But I don't know. I feel like it shows confidence as a writer if you can execute that transition well. And I think that's the key point is if you're writing like romance and then you switch to a murder mystery, it can, sometimes it doesn't go as smoothly. But yeah, I love it when authors do that. I'm a huge fan. I can't really think of anyone off the top. I think B.E. Schwab, like, she kind of does it. Like, she's got her, like, higher fantasy stuff, and then she does, like, the Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, where it's more like historical romance with, like, some fantasy involved. So it's possible. Yeah, and I like it. What about you, Brandon? What are your thoughts?
As a reader, I totally love it when like I just finish a fantasy series from an author and I kind of like fall in love with their writing, and then I see and now they're doing a sci-fi series. I just think that's really cool. I know not everyone likes, some people prefer to stick to reading their own like particular genre, but I generally, if I like the author, I will follow whatever they're doing and at least give it a try. Usually, I haven't really seen, I feel like when it comes to like fantasy authors, there's a lot of adjacent genres that they kind of leap to. It's not like you don't have like a fantasy author jump to doing like true crime or something like totally different. It's usually
Or
like,
memoir.
yeah, it's usually like sci-fi or horror. And I think fantasy as a genre is pretty unique in that it does take elements of other genres as well. Like a lot of the fantasy I read has elements of horror or romance. And so there's already a little bit of working within multiple genres there. So I think it might be less of a shock to me as a fantasy reader when they do want to like go fully explore those other genres that they've already kind of dabbled in.
No, I fully agree.
And if they do it well to where like I like their fantasy series, and then they nail the whatever other genre they're exploring. It just makes me more excited to read from them. I think that's a skill that I really admire in other writers, is the ability, like in a lot of traditionally published authors, to like change genres and still maintain a level of quality. I was listening to Brandon Sanderson on one of his podcasts recently, or not recently, it was probably like a few months ago, but to me that's recent. He was talking about like five modern authors that he considers like the best in the field, and obviously he didn't name himself or anything, but he did mention George R.R. Martin. And one of the skills he said he really admires from George is, like, a lot of people know George for A Song of Ice and Fire. What they don't know is he wrote a lot of sci-fi and horror before that, and then he even has like a weird rock music book that didn't do so well. I still haven't read that one yet, but yeah, it's crazy. Like, it's, some people are really good at it, some people love to genre hop, others not so much.
Right.
But I think you're right. It does kind of demonstrate a level of confidence in your skills as a writer that, like, you don't have to confine yourself to one specific genre. And I like to see that confidence. As a writer, I think, you know, obviously I'm going to focus on fantasy first and then we'll see where it goes. I do have ideas to explore other genres at some point, but, you know, I don't want to, like, get too ambitious just yet. But it's definitely not something I would be opposed to doing one day. I would love to do the same thing and write in additional genres. Sci-fi is a big one. I don't know that I would ever go like full horror, because I feel like I like to imbue a lot of that into my fantasy, and so I don't think I would ever write like straight up horror novel. But what about you when it comes to like other genres that you would write? Are there any in particular that really, like, you're really interested in, or?
Yeah. So it's funny, cause isn't there a, like a subgenre of like horror that it's not eldritch horror. It's cosmic horror, right? Yeah. Where there's like some sense of like sci-fi fantasy involved, but it's like mostly horror. That would be really interesting. But yeah, I think I would, what sticks out to me most is more of like the, like what I'm naturally drawn to, obviously outside of fantasy, is like some sci-fi, because I grew up reading sci-fi and I still like dabble in it every now and then. Like Gideon the Ninth is like one of my favorites, even though I could not tell you what the hell is going on in that book series. But like that kind of, like, I don't know. So yeah, I enjoy sci-fi, and I've had a story in my head for a really long time that I think would be really good. I also think that, like, because I tend to move more fantasy, it would be easy for me to slip into horror in terms of like adding supernatural elements to a horror. So yeah, I think it will always contain some sort of like fantastical in it, even if it is just like at the end, not, you know, related to that at all, just like in somebody's mind. But I do enjoy a twist on that, has to have it. So I don't think I would ever find myself in just romance or like just horror without some type of supernatural element in it. But yeah, I think it's hard if you like have a story that wants to be told and like you can't get it out of your head. I feel like you owe it to that story to just like try. And even if it's not in your genre or it makes you uncomfortable and you're like, oh, this is not what people know me for, it's like, I think we're gonna get into that in just a little bit. Like, who are you doing this for? Are you doing it for yourself? Are you doing it for your audience? Is it a mix of both? And so yeah, I think you do yourself a disservice if you don't at least like attempt to just try it out. And it's the natural progression of human learning, I think. Like, as you get older, you don't want to just like stop learning new stuff. So if that means learning how to write a sci-fi or learning how to write a mystery or a horror, you know, that's, yeah, like, why not give it a shot? There's tons of resources on it anyway, so you might as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's what you said is a perfect segue into our follow-up question.
Do you like how we did that?
Yeah, that was perfect. You did all the work, so I didn't even have to try to work it in there. But yeah, the follow-up is about writing for yourself versus writing for an audience. I think this is whether or not everyone acknowledges it, it's kind of a big question that a lot of creatives will have to face one day. Eventually, you know, you have to decide, are you going to take the stories that you want to tell in the direction that you want to take them for yourself, or are you doing it to please the audience? Like, who are you writing these for? You know, obviously it's going to be a little bit of both, I think, always.
Right.
Like, if you didn't want other people to read it, you wouldn't probably publish it, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But there is, sometimes one is going to take precedent over the other. You know, you might publish something that may not get the best audience reaction, but it, at the end of the day, you're happy with it. So yeah, I just, which way do you, I guess, and this is kind of hard to answer, I feel like, without either of us being published as of yet. You're published in an anthology, I believe, right?
yes, under a pseudonym.
Okay.
But yes. Okay.
Sorry, am I supposed to mention that or no?
Oh, you can mention
okay,
it.
Okay, cool.
I'm just not going to tell anybody what it is, unless they want to hit me up in my DMs.
Okay. I hope I didn't put out some confidential information.
No, not at all.
Yeah, no, what I'm trying to think of how to pose this question. So say you want to publish something, but you're anticipating a negative audience reaction. In this situation, is your priority pleasing your fans, or is it telling the story you want to tell with no compromise?
Yeah. So that is a genuinely good question. I will give the example of this anthology that I'm in as like where I kind of lie. I'm really into like monster romance, like monster fantasy stuff. And so I kind of stumbled into this group who was like, we're into the same thing, but let's do a Christmas anthology where each short story is about like a different Christmas monster, essentially. Oh, okay. And then we'll do that. So of course that genre is literally not for everybody. It's a very small niche group of people.
Yeah.
But I wrote that for people like me and for me. So it's like, I obviously knew my audience and I kept it under a pseudonym for that reason. Because I was like, I'm just doing this for myself. But also, we don't really have this in the like the tiny, tiny community we have. So yeah, why not? It's for both, you know, for both camps.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what I want my like official, more respectable writing name to be, I also think it's at this point, it still is a balance, even though I don't have very many people who are following. So what I mean by that is like this story has been itching my brain for the last 10 years and I'm finally working on it. And so I'm doing this as a way to confirm to myself that this is like a life goal that I want. I'm writing this for me. If I can publish it, whether it's self-published or traditional, if I do it, it at its core is for me. But I would be disingenuous if I didn't say that me creating the Instagram and the book talk account and the, you know, hiring someone to do character art, if that wasn't to entice other people to also be interested and then eventually have a big enough fan base that I continue to write for them. I feel like it's important to write for other people sometimes because it's so easy to get into the weeds of your own feelings and just be like, well, no one's going to want to read it. No one's going to care, et cetera, et cetera. But even if you just have a few dozen people who are interested in, they are looking to you for a story that maybe has not been told in that way before. Like you can only write your story and it's going to be subtly different enough from all of the others. So I think where people get caught up is, you know, the balance of that. So if you're doing it too much for the audience, then you kind of, you're not really, I don't know, you kind of lose the plot a bit.
Yeah.
Like you're trying to appease people. It's been happening with like Sarah J Maas. People are like, she doesn't look at TikTok. She doesn't look at Instagram. She doesn't look at reviews. She doesn't look at fan accounts or whatever, but she has such an intense following and a fan base that like, if she doesn't do something right, people are going to get livid or be mad about it.
Yeah.
And then there are people who speculate that she does look at all these things. And so she does try to incorporate what do the fans want. So it's a tentative balance, but I think I stay mostly in the middle, maybe a little bit leaning more towards like doing it for myself at the moment.
Yeah. No, I think I'm in in the same camp. It's obviously a balance for everybody, I feel like, at least if you're doing it right, in my opinion. Because like you said, I feel like it's going to be obvious if you're doing it solely to please the audience, or solely disregarding the audience completely. I feel like I've seen examples of both, and you can kind of just tell when it's too far skewed in one direction. But yeah, ultimately, you know, the stories I want to tell for myself first, and then I want to tell for people who want the same stories I do. Like you said, I think you put that really well with the anthology that you were a part of. Because at the end of the day, you probably won't be the only person who wants this kind of story that you want to tell.
Right.
I think my girlfriend just joined the chat. But yeah, no, I'm in the same camp as you, and I think it's a delicate balance that's hard to hard to strike.
Yeah. I also feel like, you know, the bigger you get, like the oh, that's cute. the bigger you get, the harder that like pull is to please the fans, right? Because like if you ignore fans completely or ignore the whatever, and I think that's where like publishing houses come in and can be a little slippery, because they're like, we're watching what your fans want, which could potentially influence their decisions on stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's tempting. It's tempting to just be like, I don't know, I don't want this story to go this way, but this will anger people for sure. So it's like, do you do it? Do you not do it?
Yeah. And
that's above my pay grade at this moment, but I can imagine how challenging it is.
Yeah, I can't imagine, especially for the authors who are so big, like the Martins and the Sandersons and whatnot, like where no matter what you do, you're going to make someone mad. That's got to be a whole different level of challenging.
That's just, that's almost like, it kind of goes and harkens back to like, there's a fly freaking out somewhere around here and I cannot find it. Apologies. So if you hear it, just ignore it. That's like going back to the conversation about whether or not authors should read reviews, right? It's like, it's a slippery slope, because then you just start thinking too much about what other people want rather than just going with your vision. But then sometimes that feedback is good. So it is a hard balance to strike.
Yeah. On that note, I have seen authors say that they used to read fan theories online and then they had to stop for, like, either they thought like, oh, that's a good idea, but I can't do that now because I read it from someone else, or they were like, well, that's
right,
that's better than what I came up with. So yeah, it's just funny to hear them talk about that in the interviews. But
that's funny.
All right, next, I thought this would be fun to explore from kind of two different perspectives, but I wanted to talk a little bit about book marketing. It's kind of been on my mind with the Blades for Hire anthology that we're working on.
Yeah.
Trying to kind of plan out a somewhat structured marketing campaign for that. But I was thinking about this from the perspective of a consumer first, because I feel like books aren't as big as like with ads and like being in your face as other forms of media like television or movies. So I was curious, are there any types of book marketing or like ads that speak to you specifically or like really pull you in? Because I was trying to think of examples for myself and I was like, I really can't think of a time that I've seen an ad for a book and like then also then been like excited to read it. It's a very rare occurrence, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree with you completely on that. I think it's a very rare thing for me to like, okay, unless it's an author that I already follow. So Leigh Bardugo's like Ninth House.
Yeah.
When the second one, and I'm blanking on the name, forgive me, I love the series, but when the second one came out, she had a lot of good, she's number one. Her book marketing, like her team did such a fantastic job, because they did the kind of like, they're taking the art that's on the book and they're doing these kind of slight animated videos of the announcement, like, which draws you in, like it's a visual hook while presenting what the book is also going to look like, if that makes sense. I know that's kind of hard to explain, but I do like the videos that incorporate some type of movement, whether or not it just be like the art is slightly moving and animated or whatever. But the point of this is that I already know the author.
Yeah.
I have seen, I mean, I know tons of people, as do you, people we know and are working on the anthology with us, who do literally like marketing so well.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, none of it really sticks out enough for me to be like, that's a good note. I need to do that, you know, myself. I think, again, I'm rambling, so I'm sorry. But Peter Kapp, he does the God Shard series. I don't know if you follow him. But yeah, he does awesome stuff like Three Line Thursday, where he gives like three lines of his book. And I've stolen a couple of his ideas, obviously crediting him. You know, I'm not going to just take it.
Yeah.
But he does really good, like, talking one-on-one with people in his, like, in his group, right? He's interactive, and he really talks about the lore and talks about the book so well. So I think that's, like, the only example I have of, like, indie self-published authors where they're like, I like that. I like the ask me questions, and I will answer them, and let's get into it. Like, let's start a discussion. But self-marketing is really hard. It's like, you know, you can only do so much with, you know, if you have a limited skill set.
Yeah.
But I don't think I have a good example really of just something that's like, every time this gets me, I don't really have that, you know?
Yeah. I guess a follow-up, just as I was thinking about what you were saying there with Leigh Bardugo, is how present is she on like social media, and not just in terms of sharing what she's working on, but like her personality? Like, do you feel like I don't want to promote like parasocial relationships or anything, but obviously,
yeah. Sure.
You know, I think when you were speaking on it, it just made me realize authors, when they're trying to sell books, it's very important, or very reliant on the author's personality. It feels like, just within our own inner circle, and then with what you were saying.
Yeah.
So is she like someone who's super present on social media, or?
Because
this also might just be more of, like, an indie author thing that I'm noticing, but.
Yeah. So Nicole says in the chat, like, one, book commercials, which, yes, like, back in the day, book commercials tended to be a little bit more of a thing, but they've kind of become like, there are TikToks and things like that. So it's still there. She also said that, like, Leigh Bardugo specifically has responded to posts about her cosplay and tattoos, and it makes her feel connected. I don't really see her posts that often. And I think it's because I just don't really, like, actively go through Instagram very often.
Yeah.
My personal Instagram, rather. I think it's important for authors to keep like kind of a distance from their fans. And so I don't get mad when I like tag an author and I don't get anything from them, because it's kind of like, yeah, all right, well, classic.
Yeah.
For authors like Holly Black, who are very kind of interactive in the same vein that Nicole is talking about with Leigh Bardugo, like, I do feel like then she cares, right? Like, these people do care about their fan bases, and they are trying to, like, kind of give a personal front. And most of their Instagrams were, like, slightly smaller names. Holly Black isn't a small name, but she does have, like, a niche, you know, writing style and what she writes about.
Yeah.
It's a little bit easier to be yourself, and it's a little bit easier to just kind of, like, hey, guys, I'm working on a Kickstarter for a game, which is what Holly Black is doing, and... or Leigh Bardugo, you know, like, reply to people who have tagged her and stuff. In terms of, like, the big people, like Sarah J. Maas, or, you know, she who must not be named, J.K. Rowling in this instance, but, like, back in the day, you could never, ever, right, like, expect to hear from them or have, like, a connection. Do I think that matters when it comes to marketing? No, I don't. Especially with big names. I think I care so very little about social media that maybe I'm not the best person to ask.
Yeah. Well, I think what I'm thinking about is maybe less so like one-on-one interaction with fans, and more just like presenting who they are on social media, I guess, and kind of giving you like insight into maybe how they think about things, or what they like, or just Someone in our circle who comes to mind is the pirate captain, SM Campbell. He's very present on social media. And I try to engage with him as much as I can. But so doing that, I just feel like that's a big draw for people, is like they see his passion for what he's doing. Obviously, the engagement helps, but I feel like as an author, you almost have to sell yourself as much as the book, I guess, is kind of where I was going with that.
Yeah. Okay. I understand what you're asking now. Yes, I do find connection more with authors who share more personal bits and pieces, specifically about their writing process. Mm-hmm. I know you and I mentioned like the same groups of authors every time, but they're just our favorites. But again, V.U. Schwab, she is very open on her Instagram about like what she's struggling with, how difficult it can be to write. Not necessarily insight to the what's actually in the content of the books, because she's very like she keeps that close to the chest. But I love, and she has liked some of my comments before, but I'll be like, thank you so much for sharing how you are struggling with writing. You, a famous author, you know, at this point, I don't know what her network is, but I'm sure it's substantial. But like, it's so refreshing to see that these bigger authors have problems just like the rest of us when it comes to writing.
Yeah.
When it comes to the personal stuff outside of the writing, of course I care, because like they're people too. But I don't really care as much about like, here's what I'm having for dinner tonight. I don't know. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, yeah. Does that answer your question a bit more? Because, you know, our pirate captain is fantastic at being like, here's what my wife and I are doing. But also I'm in the car, and that, if you're a self-published author, I feel like that is absolutely 100% important. And Nicole's very sweet and complimenting me on how real I am, but also it's very hard.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And also, I apologize for how I kind of like, I was kind of trying to find the right words on how to pose that question in the beginning, so it might have been a little confusing.
It's okay.
But
you and I have had a rough couple weeks, so it's
for sure. All right, this one I put in the topics because it was on my mind for the past week as I was trying to come up with a timeline for everyone working on the Blades for Hire anthology.
Yes, yes.
That was fun to work on, because I had to like sort through the Discord messages and then be like, this person says this date and this date, so which one's the latest, and then how can I do this flexible? Yeah. Like I didn't want to set a hard date for everybody. I thought like a broad, maybe like end of this month, so anytime in this month, let's shoot for that. I thought that would be a little easier, and I think that also helps reduce with the stress levels a little bit as well. But anyway, sorry, I was rambling a little bit.
Now go for it
on that topic. Since you've written for an anthology before as well, I imagine there might have been some deadlines there. How do you deal with writing to meet deadlines, whether it's some for like an anthology set by someone else or it's like your own personal goal?
I think I've mentioned before, and I will always mention, that I am horrible at setting my own deadlines for myself. So knowing other people are like relying on me to set that, like, sorry, let me back it up. Knowing that a deadline has been set for instance, in both of these anthology examples, is immensely helpful. A habit I need to break, work better under pressure. If I'm left to kind of like roam, I will roam. But if you're like, this is the straight and narrow, you got to get here, I'm like, got it. So I thrive a little bit under pressure, but I think it's important to learn how to set your own deadlines. I like them. I think obviously our like whole industry relies on deadlines. And so if you're someone who, you know, keeps pushing and pushing and pushing, you're not just doing yourself and your story a disservice. You're doing the people who are trying to like get things published, just like our anthology, you know, to print or to ebook or whatever. And so having someone who is giving you this helps me. I think the deadline you set, this new deadline, is excellent. I think the April deadline was also good, but probably obviously we saw like everyone's crazy and life and stuff. For the monster, for the Christmas monster analogy, I joined last minute because someone dropped out last minute.
Okay.
So I had to write it within 2 days.
Oh, wow.
And edited it myself. Obviously, they like had some changes to be made, but like I busted that thing out in like an evening. It was much shorter than my short story for our anthology. Mine's the longer end, like, 15 to 20,000 words. So
Yeah.
definitely different. But I like deadlines. What about you, Branton? Are you a deadline guy?
I feel like the same as you, where if I don't have a deadline, and this is true in work too, just if I don't have a deadline, it might never get done.
Yeah, God, no.
Because I'll prioritize the things with deadlines. So sometimes I find that I have to put that pressure on myself to get stuff done, like whether it's in my day job or with writing. Like even I've been struggling with the anthology, like finding the time to write. So me making sure that I have to stick to the same timeline as everyone else will, I think, help a lot. Because when it's kind of when I don't have structure, it's hard for me to feel motivated to get things done, I guess. But no, I
Yeah,
too need to break that
100%.
habit of working better under pressure, because it's
Yeah.
stressful, but it's like, I don't know. It's when I'm most productive, so it's hard to break it.
Yeah. I also feel like knowing there's a deadline is like, and I don't think people really talk about this very often, so I'm gonna say it. Sometimes I'm just like relieved for it to be over, even though I've agreed to the thing. It's like
Yeah.
with writing for the anthology, I was obviously so excited. But as the last deadline, like the April deadline came up and I like couldn't hit it, I was just like aggravated. I was like, I kind of just want this to be finished already. Like,
Yeah.
can't it just like appear on paper? I'm like, oh. So there's like a little bit of like a, I don't know, like a, I just want this to be done and ready to go. And in order for that to be like a sigh of relief that it's finished, you obviously have to do it. So it's this kind of counterintuitive thinking, but it's helpful to like just be like, hey, imagine not having a deadline for this one project anymore because it's done. And yeah, sometimes that lights it under my ass.
I feel like that's why crunch culture is so like prevalent in creative industries, just because when you have, the passion for what you're doing combined with deadlines, and then like the race to meet that deadline and have that, that satisfying feeling that it's done and then relax. I don't know. It's a hard cycle to break, because
It is.
it's kind of
It is.
addictive in a way. Like, to f makes you feel very productive.
It does. I fully agree.
I think that's all our publishing topics. They're starting to kind of blend in with the writing topics, so I might just like
They are.
keep it
Sure.
all in one section from here on out. But moving
Yeah,
into
that's
our
okay.
writing discussion following the deadline topic, before we choose our or before we talk about our writing topics, what are your, sorry, long day. We have our work in progress check-in, and I know we both kind of struggled a little bit this week, so I'll let you go first.
So I went on a writing retreat by myself a couple
That's right. I
weekends
totally forgot
ago,
about that.
and it ended up being a reading retreat.
That's okay.
It was so lovely, and also it was like just full sun all the time, so like my poor laptop would just like get too hot. I'm gonna use that as the excuse and not my drive to write. But also that factored into it. So I read a ton. I didn't really write that much. But since then and now, I have written, I try now to write a few hundred words every day, even if it's just like a paragraph. So I've written a couple hundred since we last spoke. I am feeling fine about the anthology short story. It is very bare bones. I'm just, my mantra is like, just get it on paper, just get it on paper, and then go back and figure it out. So I'm a little over halfway with
Oh,
the
okay.
anthology short story, which feels
You're
good.
farther than me,
What
so.
about you?
And
I'll take that win.
I have to represent, like, I can't be organizing it and then not be like, okay, guys, we gotta push the
Well,
deadline.
I want to push that a little bit. You are organizing and writing a story, so you
Yeah.
are in fact doing an additional layer of work. So it's
That's true.
totally okay for you to not be as far as, you think you need to be, because Lord knows I would not be as far as I am if I also had to be organizing it. So give yourself some grace.
Well, I appreciate that. But yeah, I mostly did like I said, anthology organizational stuff this week. And not a whole lot of like actual writing. Really
Okay.
trying to like nail down the timeline, and then I haven't shared in the Discord like marketing stuff, but there's a bunch of stuff that I'm working on, like trying to time cover design. When do I get that done? And then when do we
Oh,
do
yeah.
formatting? And am I going to outsource formatting? Because I've never done formatting before. I'm probably going to outsource that. But
Yeah.
yeah, well, so lots of behind the scenes stuff that I'm
Yeah,
trying to like
absolutely.
get aligned. But I am off Wednesday, so I think that's tomorrow. So
Same.
I am going to be
It
trying to get
is.
some
Yeah.
writing done then.
Yeah, good.
But yeah, maybe or hopefully we will see some more writing progress next week.
I think so.
Moving on to our weekly writing topics. Not last week, but the week before, we had touched on antagonists, which I think we both share a passion for a well-written antagonist. But I felt like it was only natural if we touched on protagonists next. Not as exciting for me, but obviously still a crucial part to any story. So I just wanted to ask the same questions I asked about antagonists. What are some likes and dislikes you have when it comes to reading about protagonists? And then how do you use those to inform your own writing?
Obviously stories can't really exist without a protagonist of some kind. I kind of honestly feel the same about antagonists as I do with protagonists. I think I have a little bit more like my standards for a protagonist are a bit higher because we're following the protagonist and not the antagonist most of the time. Sometimes it's reversed. I think what makes a good protagonist, a great protagonist in my book, is the weaknesses. They have to read believable. Villains don't really necessarily have to read as believable, right? You can make them as evil as you'd like no care, as long as it's done well. But I think with protagonists, like, there's been a lot of discussion recently of the really tired kind of romantasy slash fantasy female protagonist of, I'm petite and beautiful, but I've had a hard life, and all of a sudden I'm the magical girl, and I don't know how to do this, but then I have a week of training and then I'm perfect. It's right, that doesn't really read believable because even in a fantasy, there has to be some grounding in reality, or at least some connection to the normal world that we're like, I understand, like, I can relate to this. So I think relatability and believability has to come in the form of weaknesses, and that can be anything from, a physical weakness or a mental weakness, like, depression or whatever, but it's got to be there. I dislike the cliches. I'm not a huge cliche person. Obviously, they exist in my story to an extent, but I really try and like. An example is I just finished an arc called A Dark and Drowning Tide, by Alison Saft, and even the protagonist was very dislikable up to a certain point, and that is an example for me, at least in this book, where it didn't go as well as I expected in terms of like I still want to eventually come to like the protagonist, but I want there to be like a little bit of the reader being like, she's kind of a bitch, like, or something like that, where it's like you're kind of like, I'm gonna root for you because you're obviously the lead of the story, but I need something to knock you down a peg, or I need something like that. So I try and emulate that in my writing. My female main character Kara is kind of bitchy and not very kind, and neither is my male protagonist. Like, they've got flaws out the ass, and so I think that's what I need in any book that I read. I need flaws. I need like something for the character to develop or overcome.
So no Mary Sue's for you.
No Mary Sue's. Unless it's like just a boring romance, and then I'm like, I just want this for the romance. I'm okay.
Nicole says Legendborn is a series that does a realistic protagonist as well as a realistic person of color. I believe that's what that stands for. Protagonist.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very cool. I'm not familiar with that series, but I'll have to check it out. For me, it's
don't
the same.
Don't hate me, Nicole. I DNF'd Legendborn, but maybe I'll give it another try sometime. Anyway, what were you going to say, Brandon?
No, I was just going to say same thing. I think the weaknesses are super important to a protagonist. Kind of like redeeming qualities are good for antagonists to me. It's like it's almost like the inverse where, okay, now put some bad in your protagonists. But yeah, I like to see the flaws. I like to see people who feel human and not like they're written to be perfect. I mean, my favorite characters from like A Song of Ice and Fire are the most morally gray / heavy dark gray, like leaning towards black characters. I don't have a whole lot to add there. It's just that's the same thing I try to write as well because that's what I like to read.
Definitely.
I like to make characters that you almost hesitate to root for in a sense. It's like they're the lesser of two evils, I guess, in most situations.
No. I think that's the lesser of two evils phrase is perfect because it's like, you know, I don't know, that just like reads so much more naturally, like none of us are wholly good, like we're somebody's villain like along the way, you know. So it's and I like playing with the, like you said, like closer to black, like full villain, you know, where everything's muddy, kind of like Arya in that aspect where like she's very self-serving and just very revenge, like she's just revenge driven. But yeah, I oh god, I lost my thought. No. Oh shoot, give me 2 seconds to try and get it back.
You're all good.
Nope, I lost it. So sorry, we'll just move on.
It's
all good.
It's one of those days.
Yeah. Oh god, yeah, I know, so bad. It was a good point too.
I was gonna say, are there any examples of protagonists that we haven't already touched on? I know you named a few, but are there any that you look at that are like, yes, I like that's what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Again, I'm only gonna pull from my favorites just because
naturally
my favorite. So Jude Duart from Holly Black's Folk of the Air series is like the perfect example to me of someone who you're just like, dude, you're such an asshole, but like you root for her because she's doing what she set out to do and she's willing to stab herself over it or screw over a family member for it, you know. The espionage aspect, so she is like the perfect example of just someone who leans more towards a villainous but is still like the best. Yeah, Nicole saw that one coming for sure. Kel Maresh from the Shades of Magic series, V.E. Schwab, he's on the more like almost pure protagonist side.
Okay.
But this most recent book where it's like 7 years later from the last trilogy, but he loses his magic and that's like a really hard thing for him to like overcome, and it's his healing and his like dealing with it is not linear, and he kind of becomes like a little bitch boy for a while.
Yeah.
So those are examples of people who are like either they're gonna do everything they need to do to get what they want, but also they are the lesser of two evils, or two, they were once the glowing child of like perfection and then now they've been knocked down to the floor and are having a hard time getting back up because of their comfortability of being too comfortable and like too good at everything. Those are two like non-G.R. Martin examples. What about you, do you have any outside of
Outside of A Song of Ice and Fire, because I feel like I could pick so many from that, I do like in the series that I'm reading now all of the POV characters, to be honest, I think they all kind of capture what we were just talking about really well and exemplify what I want to read.
Yeah,
there's Pharaoh is one of the main characters. She's very mistrusting of other people, and like very closed off, and obviously that affects relationships and things like that. We have, who else? I'm probably not saying this right, but Giselle, who starts off as this really like highborn, cocky knight, you know, he pretty much had his whole life handed to him, and then he gets like maimed, and then that throws off his whole perspective of himself, and like it's kind of like a Jamie Lannister thing, I feel like, with the you know, losing the hand. So I really like that. I really love when you take like a physical flaw and turn it into like a character development, or like, okay, now these characters need to address and, you know, grow and change what they, you know, their whole worldview changes. Sorry, can't talk. But yeah, okay. those are two from a recent read that is not George R. R. Martin.
Yeah. It sounds like that's kind of where most authors are, you know, going nowadays. I feel like for such a long time, we were over the kind of like the high and mighty, like I am the hero aesthetic of like the 80s, you know, like the Xanth series or whatever. But yeah, it seems like people really do want just like characters that they can relate to, flaws and all. So I'm kind of glad for that, because no one likes a Mary Sue, you know.
Yeah, no, totally agree. Okay, our next topic is beta readers. Another topic that came to me because of the anthology. I'm trying to think of how to do, you know, whether or not we should involve like outside beta readers, because we do have a sizable group of authors. So still trying to gauge whether or not we're going to need that. But I'm sure you have people that you're close with, that you share maybe early versions of your work with, or maybe I'm wrong, maybe you don't. But I was just curious how, like how beta reading is incorporated into your process. And then I do have a few follow-up questions, but is there anyone close to you, or maybe a stranger that from Book Talk that you do share your writing with? Like, is that part of your process at all at this point? Or
So it is a pretty heavy component. I'm a slow writer, as we've established. So I don't really have a lot. I have 7.5 chapters at this point. But I've also shared, I've shared now the two first chapters just because, like, publicly, only because I think feedback is so important, even in the earliest stages. So I do have family and friends who have read them, because they are not super big, heavy readers of one, fantasy, and two, just in general. They're just kind of like, dude, this reads great. Like, I love you, and this seems awesome, and keep going. So that's great. But sometimes I do like a little bit more like robust feedback of like, okay, what works, what doesn't work. My parents have been that for like the first chapter, which is good and bad. You know, I really appreciate them. I offered, you know, I was like, please, please. But they are parents, so you're kind of like a little nervous to be like, here's this. Great. No, I very much enjoy beta reading. I think what people fail to realize about beta reading is that these do not need to be changes that you make. They are merely suggestions, unless it's actually like grammar and punctuation, and then those are the rules you need to follow.
Yeah.
But in terms of what you want to include or not include, it can be really daunting to get feedback from people. I'm pretty good at feedback, like receiving feedback. Unless I very firmly am like, sorry, this is just, I thank you for your feedback, but I'm going to keep it this way. Yeah. Very open to changing. So I like it. I like people at Wattpad, you know, like Wattpad back in the day used to be like something I wrote stories on, and at the end, and even in fan fiction, everyone's like, you know, please give me your thoughts on the chapter, whatever. It is so important to hear what people think, and like, hey, you messed up their eye color. Their eye color should be this. It was that on the other page. It's like those subtle things can, you become blind to your own work sometimes. So I love beta readers. It'll be great when I can finally send like a full manuscript to a bunch of people and be like, let me know what you think about the whole thing. What about you, beta reading?
Yeah, no, I think it's, I totally agree. I think it's a very important process or part of the process. I don't really have with A Knight of Knives anything that I've shared too much of yet. But I do have people close to me that like are my go-tos for sharing my writing. I know people say like you can't get feedback from friends and family, but I promise you my brother will talk endlessly about like what he thinks can be done better. So I trust his feedback to not be biased just because he's my brother. There are, but yeah, my family is full of readers, so they're obviously a natural go-to there. And then for me, it's just about gauging like how are readers going to react to this. So I try to find people that fit my target audience, which most of my family does, to be honest, because they read the same things I do. But then some of my writer friends and people on Bookstagram and BookTok, just sharing with them, will give me an idea. So I think it's better to do that than like go completely blind, do it all yourself, and then throw it out into the world. One, they can help you catch mistakes, like you said. But two, just any creative work feedback is a major part of it. In shaping that and making it the best it can be. So I'm a firm believer in beta reading. I think it's only a positive because at the end of the day, if there's feedback you disagree with, you don't have to make those changes. And that's a big part of, in my opinion at least, of handling feedback well. It doesn't always mean doing everything the feedback suggests. I think it's Neil Gaiman who said, when people tell you what's wrong with your story, they're very often right, but when they tell you how to fix it, they're usually wrong. So I've always liked that advice because as someone who works in a not as a writer but in a separate creative field where feedback is also equally important, that is very much true. Where yes, if the user is telling me this aspect of the user experience is not working, that's very much a valid point, but oftentimes their suggestion to fix it is misguided or it's missing something. So for
Or it's what
me,
they want.
yeah. So and yeah, when it comes to storytelling, sometimes just what you want and what the reader wants might be two different things. So it's important to be able to recognize like what feedback you want to act on, how you want to act on it, and then what you kind of want to acknowledge. Don't just totally dismiss it, but acknowledge it and just understand that you're moving in a different direction.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic way to put it. Nicole asks, is beta reading a more indie author thing? From what I know, it is. More traditional publishing, you have your own editor and it goes through rounds of editing, and that editor has like people they send it to. I do know that bigger authors tend to send like rough drafts and first drafts to their other author or friends. I know Holly Black and Cassandra Clare very often, like in their acknowledgments, will be like, thanks to Holly for reading the book that doesn't look like it looks like now. So I think that's like their version of beta reading, but in the trad publishing area, beta reading is just your editor who works with you on it. I think beta reading too for the self-publishing indie space recently is kind of almost, this might be a little controversial, but now more a bit of a popularity contest. So indie authors here, or self-published authors here, will oftentimes be like, I'm looking for beta readers. Go sign up and I will let you know if you've been selected. I like that to an extent because one, it's asking your community for assistance, it's gathering a bunch of different voices, and so that can be really helpful. However, it can oftentimes, and I've seen this happen just from like examples of drama on TikTok, where the beta reading pool is so concentrated to just like one ethnicity and one gender and whatever, you know, like one demographic group of people, that like when it does go to publishing or they've self-published it, people who are not in that demographic will come back and be like, hey, did you have anyone look at this before you published it? So there is a danger in doing beta reading or asking for beta readers on your own. My suggestion is always go to the Facebook group Sensitivity Readers. There are hundreds of thousands of people on there, and you put a post up and you say, I'm looking for a sensitivity reader for this style of book. And then you get people who will offer up their services. And also just make sure that when you are selecting people for your beta, it's not just one demographic.
Yeah. No, totally agree. It's important to like cast a wide net, make sure you're getting a variety of opinions.
Yeah. Slippery slope if you don't, I feel like. Yeah. No one wants that.
Absolutely. No one wants, because it can happen by accident. Some things may be interpreted a certain way that you didn't intend. It's just the nature of written communication.
Yep, exactly.
Our last topic, a little fun follow-up from naming our characters. Something that I struggle with, I feel like more than naming characters, is naming places. Like, very, very badly. It's probably the thing I like naming the least. I have a lot of places that still have placeholder names, and I'm just waiting for the day that that's no longer a placeholder. I'm trying to think of how to an interesting follow-up to ask from that, but
Ash, no, it's hard. It's just
hard. Hard for you too.
Oh my god, yeah. I think it's extra hard when you're someone like me who has like, I have a history of my world for the most part, and like a general understanding of the base cultures that each kind of character lives in.
Yeah.
But it can be like so hard to find one that fits with what you yourself know, but isn't going to sound dumb as hell when a reader reads it, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, I already have names in here that I know I'm going to have like a, not a dictionary, what's it called when you have like the pronunciations in the back, just because I know I love them, because I'm like, I don't want to look like dumb when I go talk to people about this book and I'm completely mispronouncing it. But yeah, you want it to both like fit the aesthetic of the area while not like pulling directly from a real life place, but just enough of like a realistic place that it reads believable. Yeah. And then you run into the danger of like mixing too many like languages and dialects if you just like, you know? So no, it is extremely hard. It's a challenge. It's like, I don't know what to do. I don't want it.
Yeah.
I also don't want to steal a name from a culture and then get like, you know, which would be understandable if I just did that and people were like, hey, that's actually not cool. I'd be like, oh no, I didn't mean that, but what do I do now? So I have a lot of hash marks, like dashes in my short story, especially. I'm just like, we need to come up with a name for this place, but don't worry about it now. We'll figure that out later.
Yeah, I think for A Knight of Knives, which is going to be my debut, it's easy because the story takes place in one city, so I don't have to name a lot of things like cities. It's more like buildings and streets and stuff like that, which I feel like are easier. But yeah, when it comes, I do have like other outlines and stuff where I have like an entire continent that is, the continent's unnamed. It has unnamed cities within the unnamed continent. It's a mess because I keep going back and forth with some names and I'm like, yeah, that sounds stupid.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, it's weird because sometimes I'll pass a sign in real life and I'll be like, that's a stupid name for a city too. But so I'm like, does it really matter? Like, is it more practical if it is just like named after something stupid? I don't know. I feel like sometimes I put more thought into it than real life, like, civic engineers have put into naming the cities. So.
Well, no, that's like the thing too about like with reality, right? Like here, you could be like, let's name it after like a famous person, and then you're like, okay, cool, that sounds good. Okay, what is this place known for? Okay, that's cool. When you're writing it from scratch, at least in a fantasy setting, that is like, yeah, you gotta like come up with this unique place. And that is like one of my number one criticisms. If you go on my Goodreads, it's like, my number one criticism for a lot of these advanced reader copies, books, or these new books coming out, is that place does not seem important to them very often. In my opinion, setting and place should be their own character.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we're not talking about cities that come to life unless you are in your book, but like, it needs to feel grounded in place. And naming is like the easiest way for that to occur.
Yeah.
Because if you're having a conversation between two characters and they're like, oh, well, we found her in so-and-so, right? And it's like, oh, but I heard she came from so-and-so. Mm-hmm. Well, that creates some mystery. But those names of those places are a good indicator of the aesthetic of the place, of the implication of the place, you know, all these extra things. So yeah. You don't want it to be silly, and you don't want it to be like just, you know, thrown in there for fun. But
yeah,
it's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like naming the town is, or the city or whatever you're naming is, you have to do so much other work like in tandem with that. Like, okay, why is it called this? And then if it's named after a character, like, you know, like you mentioned, okay, what did that character do that was so significant that they now have this place named after this? So yeah, there's a lot of thought that has to go into it. I feel like when it comes to character names, it obviously still has, you know, there's still thought that goes into that, and there's still kind of like a structure there, but you're not, at least in my experience, for most characters, there's not a whole, I don't have to do a whole write-up of why that character is named what they're named, if that makes sense,
right?
As much as I would for a location.
No, absolutely. I had to do that with my, so the main city of my female main character is kind of slightly like Roman Italian influenced, or like Greek influenced, like more like Mediterranean style. But the city is made up of four hills, and each hill is named after like the god or goddess of the religion of the area.
Yeah.
So that in of itself like was kind of easy, but I had to still spin it enough that it wasn't just like the exact name of the god. It's like, okay, how do I take this name? Like, one of them is Denia.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, that's the poverty area, because she's like the goddess of like those who can't speak or can't protect themselves or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, how do I like come up with, if it's after the goddess, then what do I do? Well, then, okay, let's name it for now Little Denia, like the smaller version of the goddess. But then the other ones, I'm like, I also don't know how to name them, so what do I do here? It's just like, yeah, you don't want it to be childish. You want it to be taken seriously, but it's really hard. And despite the fact that Fantasy Name Generator is an excellent resource, you can spend hours just like clicking next, just being like, none of these work.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Just as a side note, I love when we're talking about a topic and I get like little bits of lore from your story. It's awesome, because I didn't know that about your city, but now I know a little bit more, and it's got me more intrigued. I get like a little bit more every episode.
We need some more from you too. I know you're very secretive about yours, but we do need a little teaser.
Maybe we can do like, if we're both ready for it in a couple weeks, maybe we could do an episode where we do a little bit more info dumping on our works in progress. As much as we're comfortable.
I like that. I think that's a great idea. Maybe like instead of our, like writing weekly writing topics, we just kind of talk about our work.
That would be a fun episode. I think that would work nice. But yeah, that is all of our writing topics for today. Unless you have more struggles with naming places that you want to share.
No, I think I've ranted about it enough.
All right, so before we end, we do have our weekly writing resources. I know you did not find one this week, but
I did not find
that's one. Totally okay. Sorry. I just wanted to make sure that like there wasn't a last minute change and you didn't have one to share before I jumped into mine. That's okay. Sometimes I struggle to find one too. Like this one came to me last minute, so I almost didn't
tell
have
us
one
about
as
it.
Well. But this is Indie Author Connect. It is a website that you can go to. It has a bunch of resources for indie authors. It like a lot of external links that'll link you to whatever resource you're looking for. So say you're looking for a narrator for an audiobook, they have a section for narrators. Say you need cover design, they have cover designers. Say you need help with figuring out how to format your KDP files or whatever, stuff on that too. So yeah, it's just kind of like a nice one-stop shop for all things indie author, you know, indie writing and publishing.
Nice.
So nice little compilation of resources there for anyone who needs a lot of help with a lot of different things.
I think that's great.
A lot of us are in that camp sometimes. But yeah, that's going to be my resource for the week.
That's awesome.
It's indieauthorconnect.com. So spell it exactly how it sounds. Like, there's no weird...
No dashes or weird...
Yeah, no weird abbreviations or anything here. I believe they also have a TikTok page and maybe an Instagram as well. I'm not entirely sure, but...
Fancy. Well, thanks for having one, unlike me and my bad.
That's okay. So some weeks I'm like, I might not have one, but...
Yeah, maybe we can fiddle around with the idea of doing the first week of the month. We do our monthly resource. It is getting more and more challenging to find one that isn't just kind of a different version of the thing we've already shared.
Or maybe I know we both do one, maybe we could alternate. There's a lot of different ways we could approach it. I feel
a lot of different ways.
Where we don't have to come up with two every week. So.
Yeah, we'll fiddle around with it.
All right, well... Before we sign off, this is our last call for questions from Nicole. Blame the chaos on the solstice this week. Absolutely.
Is that what it is? That's what it is. Yes.
Nicole, I think you're our only remaining listener. So if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, anything, now is the time for those before we sign off. And Ash, I know I think I just asked you, but I'm going to ask you again. Do you have any closing comments for everybody?
Just thanks, Nicole, for sticking around for I think the entire episode, which
she
is
did
probably
too.
A record you're, at this point. So awesome, thank Nicole. You. That's... I think it's nice to see and nice to hear, and I think we're coming up in the podcast world, Brandon. Lore. Okay,
definitely
so Nicole wants lore.
Both of us. Okay. Do you mean on our stories like we were talking about? I'm assuming that's what you mean, right? But
yeah, I think that. I mean, we could also do personal lore, but that's
I don't know. That's why I want the clarification, because I don't think we're going to be doing. Okay, cool. The embarrassing stories we'll have to discuss offline. But
yeah, there we go.
Nicole, thank you for being here. Ash, thank you for being here as always. You are an amazing co-host. This show would be a lot more boring if it was just me talking into the void.
Nah, I doubt it.
But yeah.
All right, well,
I will see you.
We'll see everybody next week.
Yep. All right. Bye, guys.
All right. Bye, all.